Welcome to the Level Up Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Alex. I went from being a cop to an eight-figure entrepreneur that helps average people like you and me make money every single day. I created this podcast to help you get motivated and to crush your goals. Let's win together. Remember, I have your six. Get ready to level up right now. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Level Up Podcast. This is Paul Alex, and today I have a special guest. He's actually one of my good friends, Eddie. And Eddie is a 24-year-old entrepreneur that just hit over $20 million in revenue. And it's going to surprise you from what? Guys, we're talking about catering, we're talking about food trucks, and a specialty niche that no one is doing in the online space or that I've heard of do this much money in revenue from this business, hibachi, guys. So get ready. Here is Eddie. Eddie, what's up, my man?
What's up, guys? How you doing? Eddie the Rockstar here. It's been an honor to come to this podcast. Thank you for inviting me, Paul. And we should get started. Let me tell you a little bit about myself.
Yeah.
I'm 24 years old. I came to the States in 2016, so which makes it a little over 9 years now. And I started here as a student. I came here as an exchange student, but there is a program called Flex. I was a student in high school. And then I had a dream to become a software engineer, and I come from humble beginnings, and like coming from Asian culture is like you always have to be at the top. You always have that cousin that's always like getting those degrees, doing all this and that. And I wanted to kind of come here to pursue my dream, my American dream, which I thought would be software engineering, but I didn't realize that my life would turn to this right now, what I have going on, because like I was in college and doing this and that, and right now I'm totally like different, and I'm in business now, and I thought that I would be doing a lot of things differently, but now I'm here.
So Eddie, let's go ahead and let's break it down for the audience right here, guys. Eddie, he is a savage when it comes to business, guys. Look, Eddie came to the United States, only 9 years ago, okay? 9 years ago. And now he's a multi-millionaire. Are you the bloodline breaker in your family?
I'm the bloodline breaker.
That's what I'm talking about, dude. Hey, that's what it's about, guys. Generational wealth. Going ahead and breaking it down and being that one leader that goes ahead and changes how your family is going to go for years to come. So, Eddie, where exactly did you immigrate from? Where did you migrate from?
Yeah, so my country is a very small country of mm-hmm. 6 million people. It's mm-hmm. Central Asia. It's called Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, okay.
It's right next to Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all those Stan Asian countries. They're a little different than the normal Asian countries that you might think of, mm-hmm. like China, Korea, and Japan. So it's a little different. It's like our country is like 94% mountains, and like we're totally different. We're closer to the Caucasus than the actual like.
So it's like a rural area.
Yeah, it is. Wow. Yeah,
it is. That's amazing. And did you speak English coming into the United States?
I spoke broken English. I knew a lot of the grammar because we would go to like English schools, like take all those classes. But like, no, I didn't speak any English. Like, wow. Not like this.
Wow, that's amazing, man. And then, okay, so you came 9 years ago with the dream of becoming a software engineer. Did you always want to be a software engineer when you were a kid?
Well, that's the thing. When I was a kid, I was always like thinking of all these guys like Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, and I always wanted to be like them for some reason. And then software engineering is one of the paths that I wanted to take because like I'm good in like studying. I was good in school. I was always an A, like straight A kid. And I thought that would be the path for me. And that's why I wanted to do something in the field of engineering. Mm. But then a little bit later when I came here, I realized that software engineering is the path to go for me. And that's why I chose it.
So then how much influence did your parents have on your decision of coming to America and then actually pursuing that?
Well, my parents definitely had a lot of influence, but it was my grandma, my mom's mom,
wow.
that had, like, because she lives here,
yeah.
And then she lived here for a long time, and then she would come visit, and when I was little, I grew up with her since I was, 5 or 6 years old, so I always, like, would miss her, and she would come visit every summer,
yeah.
And I was always like, hey, I wanted to go with you to the States, and but I didn't know what it was, like, what it meant to go to the States, because, like, everybody would say, oh, go to America, I thought it was the same thing, just around the corner. I didn't realize it was so far from family. And in 2015, my grandma came down. I was like, okay, I'm going to take you to school. You're going to come with me. And then Next thing you know, I started doing all those exams, TOEFL, all those exams, and then I started, like, I passed them with like flying honors. And next year, I was already here. I was in Houston, Texas. I lived there most of my American life, and that's how it all started. My grandma was the number one influence that I had to come here.
I love that, man, because, you know, when we met, and if you guys don't know, we met actually through a mentorship. One of our mentors is Andy Elliott. He's one of the best sales coaches in the industry right now. And we met at one of the like after parties, after the conference. And then we got to know each other, you know? And, you know, I'm all about synergy, right? Energy and good people and people that like know and they're the best at what they do, guys. So when I met Eddie, I was so impressed. I was so impressed because look, just think about your story, dude, how powerful it is. You were from another country. Your grandma that came from the States came and inspired you, gave you the vision and was just like, Eddie, you could do so much more. Yeah. You're a smart kid, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, if your grandma didn't have that influence on you, what do you think you'd be doing back in your country, dude?
Well, I would probably still be there because if it wasn't for my grandma, like forcing, like literally forcing my parents to let me go, I would probably be there. But I do think that I would still be doing some really good things there because I always had the vision of, you know, succeeding. I was always like around that. And one of the biggest factors of me having that mindset was my uncle. He was always in the business and like doing this and that. And that's my mom's younger brother. And I spent a lot of time with my grandma, and my grandma would come stay at my uncle's house. And I would always see him on like business calls, business meetings. At one point he used to own the biggest, a company that would manufacture suits, like in Kyrgyzstan, and it, like, my country is huge, and it's like having that as your first mentor, my uncle Alex, and having him like that influence was huge on me because I always had that, I would say, the entrepreneurship mindset, but I didn't realize that until I came here because all I had in my mind was study, get a degree, get a job. Like, and just go to the office, do this and that, and I there's nothing wrong with that. And but now that I came here, I've saw a lot of people doing a lot of different things. Since like here in America is like land of opportunities, capitalism is great, and everybody can succeed because we don't have that back home. And like a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah.
People that are born here, people that live here, they don't realize how lucky they are to, you know, to have that. For us, it's like a dream just to come to America, make like a few bucks, and then go back home. But now that I'm here, making a little more than a few bucks, and like I want to be here, I want to grow here in America, I want to have my kids here to experience all this, and, you know, to go through this all again, because, you know, I want to help some people like me, because there's a lot of people coming in here with the similar background that I have, and like a lot of immigrants are very smart and bright, but they don't have that person to kind of like show them, hey, look, I did this, you can do this too. Because like, let's be real, people coming in here, they only have like school degree, like they always want to be like engineers and this and that, but there's a lot more than that, because you can also use the degree to kind of capitalize on like a lot of different markets. So I would say that we're a little off topic now, but my uncle was one of the biggest influences in having this mindset for me.
I love that, man. I love that. So you leveraged not only your wits, but your smarts. And then, okay, let's get to the point of your story. So you go to college, you get your degree. What happened next? Like, where was the transition where you were like, you know what? I'm gonna try entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So the story is actually very wild, because while I was my junior year in college at the University of Houston, like I was always like a part-time server, part-time chef. And at one point, you know, COVID happened. And when I was a server, the restaurant kind of closed down for a month. But it being in Texas, like we reopened back like right away in like different states. And we were doing like to-go orders, and they were down a chef. And I kind of seen everything on how to cook. And I like to cook myself. And I was like, okay, Japanese food is kind of easy to cook on a grill. I just have to learn all the sauces and stuff. So I went in to like train, and after a week, next thing you know, I started becoming a chef, like as a sous chef to the head chef that we had at the location. And I was working part-time, and with COVID there, my school was online, so I started working full-time. And next thing you know, it's like I'm already cooking up. I'm became a really good chef, which I didn't think, because I had no idea that I would be a chef like that.
And Eddie, before we get deeper into the story, what year was this?
It was right when COVID happened. So it's 2020, yeah.
Okay.
What it was, yeah.
2019, 2020, man. I remember COVID. I was coming back from Egypt with a good friend. And I remember my mom calling me, and I'm on the plane, dude, coming back to California. She's like, mijo, she's like, hurry up. There's a virus. They're about to shut down, everybody coming into the United States. And I didn't believe it. And then, no shitting you, dude, 2 days as I get into the States, boom, everything they shut the borders, bro. And I was just like, whoa, what happened, bro? You know, and it changed the world,
yeah,
right? Did. So let me ask you, man, how hard is it to be a chef?
Well, it is.
Because it's an art,
it
right?
It is an art, definitely. Yeah. It's an art. Yeah, it's definitely hard to be a chef. But if you know your stuff, if you're doing everything, because like you don't have to invent anything, because everything's already been like invented, and you just have to follow the procedures and you keep everything clean. And well, it's also like I would say it's hard, but it's also easy. Like, so it's like from which perspective you look at. If you're already a chef, if you know what you're doing, it's easy and it's your lifestyle, and that's how I started. So wow. But if you're not a chef, I was like, oh, I can never be a chef, it's hard, like you have to learn all these things. But no, anybody can become a chef with proper training.
Wow. How much are chefs making right now, just based on your experience?
Yeah, well, the chefs at restaurants, they're not making much for sure. It's like, I'm basing all this on like hibachi chefs, because I'm not sure what the other chefs are making, but hibachi chefs are making about 4 to 5 to 6 grand, depending where they are. If they're in California, they're making 7-8 grand. But
this is a month?
This is a month, and this is the chefs that work at restaurants, and they're very seasonal, because restaurants are very seasonal. And they get laid out when it comes like to January. That's it. Nobody has a job, only the head chefs stay. But with us, it's like our chefs, we always in season. We are in, and I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit later, but we're in 33 cities right now. And we, like, if it's not like a good season in one city, it's definitely a great season in another. So we always have those opportunities for our chefs, and our chefs are making anywhere from minimum of 5-6 grand to 12-15 grand a month if you're a head chef, and that's a lot.
I love that. I love that, man. I would like to call your business concept a floating asset.
Floating asset.
Use that. Okay. It's a floating asset opportunity, guys. Let's go. Okay, cool. So you went ahead and you started as a chef, and then what happened next?
So I started as a chef, and while I was in school, I was like, always trying to juggle both school and my full-time job. But then I realized that, there's a lot of opportunities in becoming a chef, and I can do my own thing. But I quite didn't have the idea yet, because like I always wanted to have somebody, like something like a restaurant, but I knew that it's not profitable if you like don't know your stuff. And but I was just a chef, and then comes my senior year, I graduate, and I was still like looking for a job as a computer scientist, and I was looking at it, and I found a job as a software developer engineering test. I got the job, it was like 65 grand a year, and I was like, okay, I made it. But then
let me ask you, Eddie, you get hired for that job at $65,000 after you graduated, and what do you think? You're like, dude, this is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like, this is a lot of money. But then yeah. I get my first paycheck, all the taxes, Social Security, Medicare.
Yeah.
I get, this is not much. I'm making the same thing at a restaurant. I was like, okay, what am I doing next? And then I was like, okay, I have to do something. And then at the same time, the restaurant that I used to work for, they started doing catering events, like a private events, like the chef would bring a grill to your house, do those events. I was like, okay, that sounds fun. And they started doing it in a couple of cities. They started doing Houston, Austin, and in Dallas. I was like, that's very interesting. You can definitely scale that. And I started like learning more about it, how they do it. And I transitioned from a restaurant to becoming a private chef. Mm-hmm. And I realized that this could be scaled to every city in America. How come nobody's doing it? And the company that I used to work for, they were owned by two Chinese guys. And I came to them. It's like, okay, guys, I'm gonna help you do this. let's grow together. I can grow this. And they just laughed at me. Like, you're only 22, 23 years old. Are you coming at us like saying all this, all that, all that? Okay. And I told them, okay, give me a couple months. I'm going to show you. So I grew. I moved to Austin. I quit my job. I moved to Austin. My job meaning my software engineering job. And then I moved to Austin. I opened up. Like, the location was already there, but they weren't doing much. And I started doing all the marketing. And I was always had interest in like Instagram marketing, Facebook, TikTok marketing. And at that time, social media was like, the ads were doing a lot better than now. But because everybody was on their phone.
That was a gold rush, dude. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about like during COVID and even like a couple years after COVID, everybody got so used to being at home, watching their you know, their phone and all that jazz.
Yeah,
so.
And having a chef come to your house, it was huge because nobody goes to restaurants at that time. And we would wear masks, like 6 feet, all that stuff. But the best part was the cooking was outdoors. So like there were like zero like scare of like, you know, catching COVID or whatever. And I started doing that, and we quickly grew to a team of 10 people. And I was like, okay, let me expand to those other cities that you have. I was like, okay, no, we already have partners there. I was like, I'm not a partner, I'm just trying to help you guys grow. And they started like shutting me down. It's like, okay, we know what we're doing. And they started copying what I do and opening up in new different cities. I was like, okay, let me become a partner, we're gonna grow together. And next thing you know, they were like, no, you're not gonna become a partner, you're just a chef. And then I was kind of sad at that time, and I didn't know what to do because I had some money to start my own company. Like I said, my uncle, Alex, that was in my country, he also was here doing a lot of his businesses here as well. And then I came to him and was like, hey, what should I do? He was like, you should start your own thing, I can fund this. And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah. And then push it to the limit. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, dude.
I gave my guys 1 to 2 months of like notice that I'm leaving, I'm gonna do my own thing. I warned them, I'm gonna start this, I'm gonna be your competitor. And they started laughing. I was like, okay,
dude,
cool.
So you actually told your bosses. Yeah. You're like, hey bro, you don't wanna make me a partner, so I got an investor, I'm about to start a company against you, and I'm letting you know a month or two ahead.
Yeah, that's what I told them, literally. That's what I said. And they didn't take me seriously. Yeah,
they didn't think you could do it.
They didn't think I could do it. They didn't think I could become their partner.
Dude, were they hating?
No, like...
They were cool, but they were like
passive-aggressive? They were passive-aggressive, and they were like in their 40s and 50s, yeah. So they had a different mindset than me.
Of course.
And, but like... They owned like a couple restaurants, so they were like pretty well off, and that company was just like extra source of income. They didn't want to invest, and and the main factor was the investment part. They didn't want to invest to open in like many different states because they thought it was too risky with COVID and stuff like that. And but I had like COVID was the single best thing that ever happened to this business, because this business model wouldn't exist without COVID, because there was no such thing as a private hibachi event before COVID. And like Japanese food is a staple in America, and I've been here for about 70 years, and like everybody knows of Benihana, everybody knows of hibachi tricks.
We all love it, bro. We all love Japanese food, trust me.
Yeah, so it's it's definitely a good thing for the business. And next thing you know, I moved to Phoenix, I moved to Arizona. And the reason I moved to Arizona, because they were already big in Texas, so I wasn't going to compete with them in Texas. I moved into Arizona. I started.
Why Arizona out of every state?
Because it was warm. Like, it was like year-round city, and like even during the summer, you can cook like just fine, and just as long as you're out of the sun, for sure.
Yeah.
But Arizona was it's also one of the biggest cities by population in America. It's like fifth or something, and that was one of the factors. It was either that or LA. And LA was a little too risky because of the regulations at that time. And so we started.
California, bro. Yeah. Gotta hate it.
California. But Arizona was a perfect middle between Texas and California. It's like, I moved to Arizona and I felt like I was in Texas still, and which was great. And I started there with a couple of my guys. Some of the guys that I hired for that company, they used to work for them still. And then once I opened my company, they were like, I want to come work for you. I was like, okay, I'm going to pay you a little more because you're coming in from the beginning, and you're going to be minority partners in some cities if you save up some money. But at that time, there's like no company. It's like, it's just me and a couple of guys just like starting this. We just have all those permits and LLC. That's it. That's all I have to my name. And I had a good chunk of investment money, and I started with about 50 to 60 grand, which was a lot of money for catering. And I ended up like using a lot of it just to like get big in Arizona. I partnered up with the biggest like influencers there. And was,
so you spent majority of the budget, the $50,000-$60,000 you had on marketing.
On marketing.
So I'm talking about marketing solves everything. I always tell people these three things, Eddie. Look, the three main pillars you guys need in any business, it doesn't matter what people do, okay? You could be in real estate, you could be a plumber, you could be an electrician, which is big right now. Those businesses, they're huge right now because all the boomers are leaving, right? So you need new operators, all you college kids out there, to go ahead and take over those businesses. But here's the thing, majority of those boomers, dude, remember your ex-partners or your ex-bosses.
They're boomers.
Dude, they're boomers. Yeah. They didn't think, hey, dude, let's pivot to social media and market the shit out of our business and then expand, dude. Yep. Everybody has a phone.
Yeah. Everybody has a phone.
You know, you could get in front of people, but you got to be smart. Dude, that was a great move, bro. That was solid.
Yep. And that was the best thing that I've ever done, because if you look at it, that was a big risk, because if it doesn't pay off, I'm out of money.
Yeah.
But the good thing is I had a backup. I had my uncle, like, I'm going to give you more if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But he told me to make it work. Yeah. It was like, he literally told me,
You got to work.
Yes. And next thing you know, we started partnering with all those companies. We started hiring a lot more chefs. And in the next couple of months, we opened up in Texas, because we realized, why wait? We can just open up. If the business is not going well, we can always close down. It's like, and it takes like about 4 weeks to get all the papers done, which is easy. For catering, it's a lot different than having a restaurant, because we don't have a brick and mortar location. And basically, we opened up in less than 5 months, we opened up in 10, 15 cities and in five states. And we started growing from there. And they saw, like, my ex-bosses, they saw the growth that we had, and they started investing in their business, like in their catering. They hired some young kid, and to do that, it was probably their like relative or something. I never seen the guy.
To do the marketing, to
expand, to hire chefs. But like a lot of their chefs were from restaurants. It's like, when you just get started, the main problem with the hibachi catering service is you don't have a constant flow of parties or events, and so your chefs don't get paid.
Got it.
And those chefs would work at restaurants and then call in sick when they have events, but it wasn't sustainable at all. What with our chefs is, I hire anybody, but most of our chefs were like younger guys, a little older than me, a couple years.
They were hungry.
Yeah, they were hungry. They were all working, and they were all immigrants. So, and they always wanted to come here, and they started as chefs at restaurants. Like the first 15 chefs, they were like full-time restaurant chefs.
Wow.
And I told them, if you come work for me, believe me, we're gonna make a lot. So, and I would pay their salary from my own pocket. Like, even if they don't have events, I would still pay them.
Yeah, and you took care of your people.
Yeah, I took care of my people, they took care of me, and that's how we were able to compete with everybody else with it. Because those guys, my ex company was a lot bigger at that time, and they had a lot more chefs, and now we have a lot more chefs than them. They're also in a couple cities, but we are in over 30 cities right now in 15 states. And we opened August of 2023, and it's a little over a year now.
So Eddie, let me stop you right there before we keep going ahead, because this is exciting stuff.
Yeah. Dude.
This is very inspiring, especially, you know, I know a lot of my friends, a lot of my family members, I know a lot of my network is going to watch this. They're going to be like, dude, we need to meet Eddie the rock star. I was like, yeah. But no, dude. So, okay. How many employees did you have before you hit your first mill?
Before I hit my first mill?
Or when you hit that one mill, like how many operators did you have with you?
About 20 to 25.
Dude, that's amazing.
20 to 25.
That's amazing. Yeah. I like to call that lean and mean.
Lean and mean, yeah.
Which is good. That's how you're built. Yeah. You know, and one thing that, you know, I can relate to you, bro, is that you build a culture, you build a vision, and you lead by example. You know, you took care of your people even though there was no income coming in.
Yeah.
Majority of new business owners, you know, they get the $1 million and everybody's like, oh my God, $1 million. And what do a lot of the younger business owners do nowadays? They end up taking the profit and spending it on stupid shit, right? And that's how you run out of business the fastest way, guys. Don't do that. And reinvest in your business, like Eddie, okay? And then you can scale up to 20 million. Yeah. So, okay, cool. All right, so you went ahead, you had, you're inspiring these operators and you're making them minority partners. How does that look like? Let's say, you know, I see you on Instagram, okay? And I'm like, hey dude, I just graduated from culinary school. I'm hungry, I'm young, I'm like 20, 21. I wanna be a minority operator. How would that look like?
So it looks a lot different now than it used to back then.
Yeah.
Because we were just getting started. We didn't have a structure. We were just getting started. And right now that we already have the structure, we already have everything, it's a lot harder to become that partner in the company.
Okay. So,
and most of the partners that are becoming partners now are the chefs that are used to work with us for a long time.
Yeah.
That since the beginning. And what it looks like is they come work for me and they show that they can handle the pressure, they can handle being a team leader, sharing the vision. It's definitely a must because in the company, we have the culture of like, we work for the vision. We don't work for money. We look at it, we look at the end goal, and money is just a side effect of doing things right.
Yep.
And that's how we look at it. But some people coming in, they only wanna make, you know, a quick cash and then just go do their own thing, which is okay. They also make me money by like working, but those guys that end up staying and becoming partners, they definitely have to share the vision. It's like, we're a growing company. It's our second year now, second full year. And now that we are kind of established and we have that social media presence, we have the presence in the catering industry, because nobody else does this like this. There's a lot of different companies that, you know, do like similar things, but they don't take it seriously like us, because I know those guys that started those companies and they're doing pretty well for themselves. They're making money, but their chefs are not making money.
Right.
Their company is not growing.
Right.
It's not going to be sustainable for a long time.
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, in my company, I'm making money, but so is everybody else. Everybody else is getting the share that they work for. And I think that's the best part about the culture that we have, is that everybody's growing. And if they want to invest money in the company, they open up a new city. For example, if you just graduated from a culinary school, you coming in like, okay, I don't want to come work for you. You work for me for a few months, you show that you actually mean it, and then you want to become partner, then we have the talks of like opening up a city. For example, we're not in like Seattle. You want to move to Seattle and have our franchise there. Right now, it comes with a food truck. In any new city we open, it comes with a food truck. So you invest a certain amount of money. The most that I allow my partners to become, to get is like 30%.
Mm-hmm.
But the minimum is just like, you can get as little as 5, 10% and just work. But it's going to be worth it if you go like a little more.
Of course.
And every city is priced a little different,
right,
because of the market research of nearby cities. For example, we weren't in Vegas for a long time, but we were in LA, we were in Phoenix, we were in Salt Lake City. And then Vegas was like booming. We our chefs would drive from Phoenix to Vegas for events. So we opened up Vegas, and one of the chefs that would actually like drive 5 hours for an event, he wouldn't even ask for gas money because he wanted to become partner there. And I was like, no, you can't do that, dude. And I would still pay for gas, but it's like, he would do it from his heart. Like, he would like, I want to help the company grow.
He's passionate.
Yeah, he's passionate. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, you want to become partner? He didn't even say anything. And I actually was the one to offer him that. I was like, you already going there a lot, but you want to become partner? I was like, okay, let's do it. And he had a lot of family members, young, hungry guys that wanted to make some money. And they came in for training. And a couple months of training, they started becoming chefs. And now Vegas is one of our biggest locations.
I love that. Yeah, dude. I mean, Vegas is such a hub because you have like a lot of tourists coming in there. I mean, we're just talking about the ClickFunnels event with Russell Brunson, dude. There's going to be literally like over 10,000 marketers there, business owners, all that stuff. And all these people, they all make money, right? So at the end of the day, it's a big, big, big area to go ahead and invest to. You have anybody in Miami?
We have a lot of people in Miami.
I love that. Yeah.
Miami is also one of our biggest locations because of all the tourism, of all the batch parties.
Key West. I would think so, dude.
Yeah. And not only in Miami, we're in Sarasota, we're in Key West, we're in Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville. So we just took over Florida.
I love that. Okay. So you went ahead, your business is now booming. Okay. What are you focusing on now, dude? I know that when we talked to at Andy's event, you were like, hey, dude, you know, I'm thinking of getting into food trucks and then start building them and, like, you know, putting them out there. So talk about that right now. You transitioned from Hibachi and now you're just stacking more businesses. So let's talk about the food truck industry.
Yeah, so going to Andy's events is like, and also going to the vault for a PBD. One of the best things that he talked about that stood out with me was just adding on to your business. I'm not sure if you were there, but he had a diagram of all his businesses. They're all connected.
Yeah.
They all bring some kind of profit to one another. And I realized I can do the same thing. And having restaurants is good, but it's not very profitable right now. But having food trucks is like you generate almost the same revenue by not having the same investment. So I thought about it, and last year we started our first food truck in Phoenix last year in April, and it wasn't very well at the beginning because it was hard, like we didn't know what to do, and it was very hot as well in Phoenix. And we started, and then after a few months we kind of like knew what to do, we kind of caught the hang of it, and we started like doing a lot of sales. Our like first real month was about 50-60 grand. We thought it was really nice.
Wow.
And we net about 30% of that. No restaurant nets 30% of their revenue.
Dude, no. Yeah. Restaurants are usually what, like underneath 10%?
Underneath 10%.
Yeah, dude.
1-10% is like the revenue, like the net that they get from the revenue. And it's very sad.
Yeah.
Because
you work hard.
Yeah, you work hard.
Invest a lot.
You invest a lot of money and you get less than 10%. And it's like, okay. It's bullshit, yeah. But food trucks was one of the best things that we ever thought of. And then we opened up in Dallas. And we kind of slowed down on that because we didn't know like how it would work out. And it started working out great. And now we're in February. We have 8 trucks now. We have 2 in Phoenix, 2 in Dallas. We have Austin, Orlando, Miami, Houston. And we're opening up a lot more. And we're rolling out at least 1-2 food trucks a month to come in those cities, because we already have a lot of existing cities and that need food trucks. And getting into that was huge. And that revenue, that $20 million, was solely from catering. It was from private events. And now looking into this year, private events, it's also going to be good. It's also going to do a lot of revenue, but food trucks definitely going to add a lot. Yeah, it's definitely going to grow like that.
What are you projecting?
We're projecting, well, it depends on how many we have more, but from what we have right now, we're at least going to double in revenue this year.
I love that. So you're looking at a $40, $50 million
a year. $40 million a year. And
dude, that's awesome.
Which is huge for us because we're only like second year in business.
Yeah.
And we're still learning a lot. And I can't wait to like our third or fourth year, because by the time we're going to be the sharks in the business.
Yeah.
Right now we're baby sharks. Yeah. We're learning. We're learning from everybody, taking in all the advice. But right now I'm only 24. I'm going to turn to 25 in a couple months. It's like, what is next for us? Because when we go to all these events, everybody's a lot older than me.
Yep.
And they're at least in their 30s, like early 40s.
Yep.
And they already made it in life. And everybody is like already successful at that period of time. But I still have 15 years on those guys.
Yeah, you do.
And so I still have a lot of room to go.
No, you have a lot of room to grow, dude. And you're just going to grow and grow and grow. And you're going to be massive, dude. I can't even see your guys' business like demolishing Benihana.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time. But okay. So let me ask you. So for like investors or anybody watching right now, let's say they're like, dude, this is super inspiring. I want to work with Eddie the Rockstar. Is the investment to invest in one of your franchises? I know you talked shortly about like the Hibachi business, but is the food truck business a different investment?
Yes, it's totally different. So if you invest in a food truck, we have a couple of different investment options. If you want to become a silent investor, just invest your money, park your money in a food truck and do that. that's also good. But we also have the investment opportunities for chefs that want to come work and own their food truck. And they would own some share of that franchise, and we would all share the profit. And but we would be helping with all the marketing, with all the paperwork and everything. We would be the ones to take care of that. It's like a turnkey business. Basically, you're coming in, you invest your money, but you have to know, you have to go through like rigorous training. You have to, because like working in a restaurant and working in a food truck is totally different.
Yeah,
it's very similar in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of factors that you need to take in, and food trucks are a lot harder to run than a restaurant. And there's a lot of regulations they have to follow, because once you get caught with not following like regulations, you get shut down. Yeah. You cannot open under the same density in that city anymore. And that's why you have to, if you do decide to work with somebody like that, because there's a lot of different opportunities and for investment in like different companies other than us, but you have to choose to work with the right people that know what they're doing. And the ones that take care of all the compliance part is like, it's huge.
Yeah.
Because once we grow to this amount, it's like, because we grew very quickly. It was literally like vertical growth, and like we didn't take care of a lot of things, and we made our mistakes. But the best part about it is we learned from them. Now that a lot of things we're doing is like totally different, and we're always looking for new partners, new, like even if you don't have money, you can come work for us, make money, and then become partner. So it's like,
I love that. I love that. That's a massive opportunity, man. I mean, you know, the fact that you're giving someone who doesn't know anything about business an opportunity to come work with you, learn from you, which, to be honest, guys, I think that is the biggest key takeaway here. If you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or you're watching this on YouTube, the biggest key takeaway is it's not the money when you initially start in business. It's actually that mental assets that you consume. Just like you said, dude, you guys are baby sharks. You guys are consuming everybody from the different entrepreneurs and networks that you're in right now. Everybody that's like my age or in their 40s. And dude, you're going to be a beast. I mean, you're already a beast, but like we're talking about nine figures, like killing the game, bro. Sure. So I don't know if it's okay if we could talk about like what would be the range for like a silent investor? Is that something that we could talk about?
Yeah, for sure. We can definitely talk about that.
Okay. And so somebody right now, let's say somebody is doing good money. They're like, dude, I want to park my money somewhere where it grows. And with somebody like you who knows what they're doing, what would a silent investor investment look like for a food truck?
Yeah, so we do a lot of different investments, and starting from 50 grand and up, and we even had some silent investors that invested seven figures in the business, and they're generating passive cash flow, and which is good for them because they're already like succeeding in life, and they're not worried about this. But if you believe in the company, if you believe in like what you invest in, you're definitely like, we have a lot of opportunities. So something basic we'll be looking at is about, let's say $100,000. You invest $100,000, you can expect 10 to 15% of that a year while still having that equity in the business.
Yep.
And but as of right now, we're like shifting to, it's like we have a lot of cash flow and we don't really need silent investors unless it's somebody that can bring value to the company.
My man.
Yeah, so that's what like we're shifting towards to, because
you have to.
Yeah, because our biggest problem right now is the people to run the businesses, to run the food trucks, to run all the cities. And that's been the biggest struggle, with having the right personnel, having the right people that can do that. So, and if you have the money, it's good. But if you also want to come make money, because like you're going to make a lot more if you're like, if you're actually like,
active in the business.
In the business, exactly. Yeah. You're going to make a lot more. You're going to learn a lot. And I would say the biggest takeaway for all the investors that I have is the mind, like the mind, like the mindset shift, because they're coming in, like a lot of the chefs, they don't know much about business. They only know how to cook, but that's good. That means you can learn. It's never too late.
And it's easier.
Yeah, it's easier
to learn than have somebody that came from an existing business that probably didn't know what they were doing or probably failed, and they bring those bad habits.
Yeah.
They absorb everything fresh,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Because you're the expert.
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome, dude. You know, we might have to talk after this.
Yeah.
but no, I totally get it. And, you know, in business, man, I mean, this is, for me, like, having able to employ you know, gratefully, over 200 people in the past 4 years, is that, you know, one thing that I learned is it's hard to find people that are passionate. You know, you want to be able to find and groom people and basically make them a copy of you.
Exactly. Right? That's what we want.
And have the same heart, culture, drive, passion. Because at the end of the day, what grows the businesses? Conviction, dude. Conviction. You know, you got to be like, we're the best. And we're like, but nobody knows you. But we're still the best. Right? Yeah. And that's just the way it goes, dude. So let me ask you, man. Okay. So hibachi to food trucks, catering. And I know you were like, dude, I'm starting to invest in real estate. So why, and like, you got all these booming business, bro. Why real estate?
Because it's also connected to my business, to catering to the food trucks.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
And I always want to, like, if I put my money in something, and if I put my time into something, I want to make sure that it benefits my other businesses as well. So, like I said, we have over 100 people working for me right now, and they need housing. Wow. So it's basically like they pay rent, but they don't pay rent in a way like if the house is like $2,000, they pay only some part of it. It's like another way of me like giving back to my people, and they save money, but also make me money, which is good. And by owning those houses, I can like eliminate a lot of the costs that I already have. For example, if I would rent a house, if they would rent a house, like a 5-bedroom house for 5 people, it would be like $3,000 in Arizona. But if I would own the property, the monthly payment would be half that, and that would save them all the money. Like, nobody can find a house for like a $1,500, like 5-bedroom house, which also has all the nice things and the features, but it's like, how do you say, like, it helps my business because it also grows and it saves them money. So it's like integrating all that into the hibachi business, mm-hmm. because all of our chefs need housing in different states. And my goal is to have at least one house in 33 cities that are already in, because they're already making money. They're paying rent anyway. So why not just own those houses and just own the property, just like McDonald's is, yep. like, you know what they're doing. It's like they're making all the money from real estate, mm-hmm. from all those guys.
And because they're renting it out to the franchisees.
Exactly. And yeah. that's what we can do. That's what I'm trying to do right now. I'm investing in 5 cities right now. Mm-hmm. I own 5 houses, one here in Fort Lauderdale, mm-hmm. and which is good. And like, it's also like going up in value, and hopefully it's going to keep doing that. Yeah. But I'm not very, like, my focus is in the catering and in hibachi.
Yeah.
Whereas like buying a house was very simple, but also like I'm not trying to go heavy in the housing business just yet, like, because I don't want to
focus.
I don't want to make sure that my focus stays where it's at right now and we keep growing, because that's the main source of revenue.
and that's a smart move, man, because with a lot of beginner entrepreneurs, I've legit, ever since joining the digital space back in 2020 myself, I've talked to hundreds of thousands of aspiring entrepreneurs, yeah. Clients, my network, you know, great entrepreneurs like yeah. you, dude. And the number one thing, the number one mistake that I see with beginner entrepreneurs, which you're pretty squared away, you're very knowledgeable, bro, is the fact that you are focusing on your main source of income. Majority of people, once they get a little bit of money, they end up going ahead and diversifying, and they're forgetting mm-hmm. that they need to focus on the main yeah. bread and butter.
Exactly.
You know, it happened to me last year, dude. I was running 2 8-figure companies. I was running a high 6-figure company, and dude, I was lost in the sauce, bro. Like, I was depressed. I was like, why am I getting older? Like, I was just like, damn, like, yeah. what's going on, right? But in the outside, right, in social media world, everybody, my friends are like, oh, this guy's super successful. He's able to handle it, blah, 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 blah. But I'm like, dude, no, this is like, feel like shit.
Yeah.
So it's great, dude. You're investing in real estate, but you're doing it to help your team, which is phenomenal. Because I know now that you're helping them with housing. One of the biggest needle movers for me back in 2021, I actually, my first 2 employees that I had hired for one of my 8-figure companies, I told them, I was like, I had a penthouse in San Diego. I was like, hey guys, like, I got 5 bedrooms. Like, why don't you just come stay with me? Yeah. They were like, okay. So those guys, they ended up being the best employees I ever had, dude. One of them, helped me grow the 2 8-figure businesses, and now is traveling the world, dude. Like, he's in Africa, he's gonna go to Dubai, he's gonna go ahead and travel to Colombia, but now he's building his own business. And he's just like, dude, like, this is amazing, like, thank you. And then the other guy, he started a sales agency, and he was like, he came from Vietnam, he was 20 years old, now he's 24, but he's like my CRO, my chief revenue officer for one of my companies, and he's going ham, dude. He's living life. Yeah. And that's what it's about, dude.
It's all about your people.
Your people, man. You got to invest in your people, the culture, everything. I love that, man. So cool. So you're investing in real estate, but it's not to go ahead and make rental income. It's more to help your business by providing that to your employees.
Exactly. And like, I'm not like really looking for that revenue from, because it's not much. It's like, it's more about having those people stay somewhere nice, having those people with no problems from like landlords and stuff like that. Like, I would be their landlord, but I'm not making any money from them. They're just making minimum payments to the house, and which is good for me, but also good for them. So it's good for everybody. It's a win-win. And that's where I strive for. And like you said, I'm not looking to like diversify what I do right now, because I don't see a point in that. I see the vision that I have for the company, it's at least $100 million.
Yeah.
And we're trying to like, you know, grow it to a point like that. And talking with PBD, and he has a guy, his name's Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very smart guy. He's a little older than me. And I talked to him a lot, and there's like the vision that those guys have. It's also at the Elliott Group. Bryson is my guy. They have that vision for my company. It's like, I didn't have that vision until I met them. Because like, I was thinking, if it can do 20 million, which is great, that's it. That's like the ceiling for me. But no, right now it's not even the bottom anymore, because yeah, it's like we have a lot of room to grow. And yeah, like, if we do everything right, it's gonna be $100 million company in a couple years.
Brother, you know, majority of new businesses, majority of them, they end up failing within like 1 to 3 years, dude. Dude, you are an outlier. You like defeated the odds, and like all the haters, your previous bosses that were like, nah, like, you're just a chef.
Yeah.
Bro, you just went, boom. Like, you're like, you know, get out of here. You know, I'm dominating. And that's awesome. Now that you told us your secrets, bro, you gave us the secret sauce. Let's talk to our audience, man. So anybody watching this right now, I mean, you're a young guy, dude. You came 9 years ago, bro. So when you were like, what, 15?
I was 15, 16 years old.
Yeah, dude, 15, 16 years old. And you came in there, you're like, dude, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to basically live the old school American dream. Yeah. That's what I like to call it.
Old school American dream.
But you're living the new American dream, bro. You know, you're your own boss, you're young, yeah, you're killing it. And you have that vision of creating a 9-figure business. And you're getting mentored by 9-figure entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
What more do you want? So, for anybody watching right now that is possibly like, let's say in high school, college, they're trying to figure out their life, maybe they're in a rut, you know, what type of advice would you give them about going and starting a business? Like, what would be some key takeaways that really helped you?
I would say the number one thing is like, you have to be able to work for somebody if you want to be your boss. Like, if you want to become the boss, you have to be able to work under somebody. Yeah. That's one of the best things that I was able to experience, because becoming an employee is like, you know, people look at it like all the young kids right now, like they don't want to work for somebody, they want to have their own business, but then they don't realize it's like, if you're an employee, you work from 9 to 5, but if you're a business owner, you work 24/7. It's like
100%.
So people still have that like illusion of like, they think that being an entrepreneur is easy, but no, it's easy in some ways. You have your own schedule and stuff, but it doesn't mean that you have no schedule. It means you just make your own schedule, but it's a lot more stacked. It's like, you have to be able to manage. You have to, if I had to give like one advice to somebody, it would be to have a mentor. If it would, like, that was
to make it things easier.
It literally makes things easier for you. It's like, why would you want to have all those, like, have the learning curve, like 2-3 years, do all the mistakes, when there's somebody that's already made those mistakes and can teach you, like, show you the way? It's like, right now, if like somebody is getting started in catering, it's like I didn't have anybody to learn like in that niche, but then I did it myself, and it's good. But as somebody that's like starting, if they fail, they might lose motivation. They might not have enough cash to keep going, and there can be a lot of factors. And when you have a mentor, you know that guy is gonna show you the way, he's not going to do it for you. There, no means he's not going to do it for you, but he's going to show you the right way. And I think like it's very like under, like it's very underrated.
It is.
It's like, you also need a lot of like training and sales also. It's like
100%.
Yeah, you,
sales is everything.
Sales is everything. It's like, it's like you and me talking right now. I'm selling myself to you. It's like literally like the number one skill that you should have is like sales. You have to get good in sales. You have to be a good leader. Show, you have to lead by example, and you just have to get started. Honestly, like too many people are just waiting for the right opportunity, for the right
perfectionist.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to get started. You have to fail, and like, if I fail right now, I'm still only 24. If I fail in 5 years, I'm only 29. And like, you can still succeed. It's like, why not just stack up all the experience, all the, because like failure is good for you. It's like, it's that's
lessons,
how you learn.
Dude.
Exactly. They don't teach that in school. In school, it's like, if you fail, you get an F, and you're not encouraged to fail. But in real life, you should fail. You should fail as many times as you can to like, to learn from those mistakes and like succeed. And I think that's one of the main key takeaways that I've learned from a lot of different entrepreneurs that I talk to, from my mentors. You just have to start. You just have to start somewhere.
You just have to start in perfect action.
Exactly.
Don't be a perfectionist. Work on your time management. I mean, dude, you're preaching to the choir right now, dude. Like, seriously. All right, cool, man. So, talk to our audience right here. Let them know. Give them some words of encouragement, motivation from a 24-year-old multimillionaire that came to this country 9 years ago, and give them that sauce, bro.
All right. So, like I said, I came here 9 years ago. I'm only 24 now. I spoke zero English when I came here, and I was able to make it in life. Was able to make it in the new American dream. That means anybody can do it. You can do it too. All you have to do is just keep your mind, like, be focused on what you're doing. Like, don't get distracted by all the social media right now and stuff like that. There's a new study that came out that was 82 hours of distraction every week. It's like more than a full-time job. And like, Patrick McDavid has a video on that. It's like, this year of 2025 is a year of surprises and a year of distraction. There's gonna be so many like things that will take away from you, from your path, and like, but you have to be dialed in. You have to get into the monk mode. Whatever you're doing, you can be in school, get into studying. You can be in like starting your own business. You just have to get dialed in. You have to pay for those mentorships. You have to get into the sales trainings, and you have to succeed. Like, you have to do whatever it takes. Like, it doesn't matter if you're just getting started or if you have some money. If you have some money, it's good. You can invest all that in yourself, because the best money you can invest in will be in yourself. And self-growth, self-improvement is the name of the game right now. It's, if you're young, if you're under 30 years old, you can. There's so many people to learn from. And I would suggest you start doing that now. Don't wait for the right opportunity. Don't wait for the right moment. The time is now. And it's like Dana White said, it's so easy to succeed in today's age because everybody's so lazy. Everybody is like doing on, like, I don't know, on Instagram, YouTube, whatever, TikTok. But if you're dialed in for 6 months to a year, you'll be surprised how your life can change. And I think that advice can apply to anybody if you're already successful too. If you're making 7-8 figures, if you dial in for 6 months, you can make 9 figures. It's like, it's that compound. But the effect that you have on your life is like, if you focus in, if you dial in, it's same with me right now. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't party, I don't go out, I don't use social media. I'm just dialing on my business, and that's it. I think that's the secret sauce. It's just keep working, keep grinding. There's no secret. Like some people are looking for the secret way to do this, one way to do it, but no, you just have to get started. You just have to do things. Don't think too much. Just have to go ahead and do it. Keep failing, and that's you have to carve your way to this, to success, and that's your path. And everybody has a different story, so make your own story, write your own story, and that's why like I'm here. I wanna, like, if you're looking for somebody to learn from, I'm always here. I'm young, and you can learn from me. I'm not gonna charge you anything. We can be friends, this and that, because I met a lot of guys at like the NDLA events. Young guys are my age, but they're not where they want to be in life. So we just, you know, I show them the way. I kind of, everybody has their own path. But if you have good mentors, you're definitely gonna get there.
That's what I'm talking about, bro. That's what I'm talking about. You just dropped a couple of bombs on there, bro. So where can the people find you, dude? IG, YouTube, like all social media platforms. Where do you want to direct them?
Yeah, so if you're looking directly for me, you can find me on Instagram at Eddie the Rockstar. But if you're looking to work for us, if you're looking to work for Rockstar Hibachi, that's literally Instagram at Rockstar Hibachi. You can DM us there. You can file a form on our website, rockstarhibachi.com. Anything. If you have any other questions with like catering or whatever you want to get started, and if you want to work for me, or would it be anything else, just DM me on Instagram at Eddie the Rockstar, and I'm your guy.
There you guys have it, guys. Eddie the Rockstar, founder and CEO of Rockstar Hibachi, guys. 24 years young, multimillionaire, came to this country just 9 years ago. Man, what an inspiring story. I highly recommend that you guys share this with your family, friends, anybody that you care about, because this will set anyone on fire. I'm pumped right now, bro. I'm pumped right now. This was a solid, solid interview podcast with Eddie. Guys, make sure to check us out on Spotify and Apple and on YouTube. This is the Level Up Podcast with Paul Alex. We'll catch you on the next time.
Let's go.
Peace. Thanks for listening up to the Level Up Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to share with a family, friend, and everyone you know who's ready to level up. Leave a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you tune in. It really helps spreading the word. And don't forget to check out officialpaulalex.com for more episodes and resources to kickstart your journey. Let's level up together.